Hey Elixir Mix fans, I'm Jamin Holmgren, co-founder of Infinite Red. I used to do a lot of Elixir back in the day, including building a content management system for Phoenix called Thesis. These days, we're a small but experienced team of 30 React Native consultants. We've been around since 2015 and have a lot of experience in React Native going all the way back to the beginning. If you're looking for expert help building, optimizing, deploying, and supporting a React Native app, I'd love to chat. Just go to infinite.red/elixirmix. And don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the Elixir Mix podcast so that we can keep sponsoring this show. Now, back to the episode.
After just 3 weeks of using EP Protocol by MaximusTribe.com, the results are in. I've doubled my testosterone with just one daily pill. And I have to tell you, I feel amazing. I have more energy, better productivity, and that extra level in the gym. Give it a try and get $100 off using code PODCAST100 at MaximusTribe.com.
Results may vary and outcomes aren't guaranteed. Claims have not been reviewed by FDA, and Maximus does not claim to treat or prevent disease. MaximusTribe.com.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Elixir Mix. I am joined, as always, by our wonderful panel of hosts, including Bruce Tate.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Bruce. We've got Josh Adams.
Hello.
Hi, Josh. Lars Vikman.
Tjena, tjena.
Wait, what was that?
Colloquial Swedish.
Very nice.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Very cool. And Stephen Nunez.
Hello. Or hola. Steven? I guess I have to say hola or something.
Yeah, I think you do have to.
Que lo que for my Dominicans out there.
Perfect. And joining us as a guest, we are very lucky to have Adolfo Neto, who is a professor of computer science, and he's also very active in the Elixir community, especially with regards to Elixir education. I am super happy that you could join us today because these are really some of my favorite topics, education and Elixir. If you wouldn't mind, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you very much. My name is Adolfo. I'm a professor at the Federal University of Technology, Paraná, which is here in Curitiba, Brazil, and I teach Logic for Computer Science and also an Introduction to Functional Programming course. And I got interested in Elixir because it was created by a Brazilian. I have to say that because that was attracted me to the language at first, but now I admire the language and also its community.
So do you actually get to teach Elixir at your university?
Yes, I don't have many students. Last offering, I had 4 students only because it's an optional course. You don't have to take this course to graduate in computer science. Or actually, we don't have computer science here. It's computer engineering and information systems, but it's an optional. For instance, I have an Agile methods class two, and it has much more students because it attracts more interest it's more interesting for the students to learn what's Scrum than Elixir. But I hope that as the time passes, more students are going to get interested in this class.
It's interesting. We've gotten to spend a little bit of time together. For those of you who don't know, I have a mentoring group. And Adolfo shows up as, I don't know, something in between a mentor and a mentee, which is kind of great for my students. But I have some questions. Do you have any techniques that you can throw my way? Or are there any things that we do that you're going to take with you in your teaching approaches?
Oh, actually, I think I'm learning more with you than the opposite. Because before this Introduction to Functional Programming course, I only taught Logic for Computer Science. So it was not an introduction to programming. I'm still trying to learn which is the best approach to teach programming. And what I try to do is teach them how to write a program in Elixir, but also the fundamentals, papers about the actor model. And so it's kind of mixed. There is also this academic approach that I think that's what's different from your approach with your mentees.
Yeah, it's been fun to actually have smaller classes where we can flip the keyboard. And I think that has been an eye-opener for me. Do you get a chance to actually invite the kids to get up and code ever? I know I never had that in my university.
Yes, because I'm also a big fan of the coding dojo technique. I have written some papers about it. And whenever I can, I invite my students to do a coding dojo with whole class, and every 5 to 7 minutes, they do pair programming. So there is two persons on using the computer, and one of them is the driver, and the other is the, how do you say? I don't remember the name, but the one that's observing and say, no,
navigator.
Yeah. Yes, navigator. And after some time, the navigator becomes a driver. The drivers go back to his seat, and another student takes the place of the navigator. You have to be always paying attention to what's happening to be able to write some code in front of the class. That's something that I really like. I had a master's student who wrote, actually, no, two master's students. They wrote their thesis on coding dojo. So I try to practice this with my students.
It's interesting that you mentioned giving your students, I think you mentioned some papers on like the actor model to read. And that made me realize that when I was learning Elixir, I didn't really know what that was or even have an opportunity to think too much about it until maybe almost like a year into, you know, writing Elixir professionally. And I have an OO background. Like I learned Ruby first, I was a Rails developer. And so a lot of my journey into Elixir was characterized by like writing a lot of really messy sort of OO inflected Elixir code. And so one of the things I'm always curious about is, you know, what is it like to teach and learn something functional first, as opposed to learning OO and then like trying to sort of fight your way into a functional way of thinking? I don't know if you've taught OO as well as functional, or, you know, how you think about these different, totally different frameworks and mental models.
Yes, the problem is that my students, when they come to this optional course, they already know how to program. So I don't know how it is to teach functional programming first, because they already know the problem that they have is in that I tweeted a few days ago was that they do what you said. They know how to do object-oriented programming, and they try to do something like that with Elixir, and they have, it's really difficult for them, for the few students that I had, try to write some more idiomatic codes, some code that looks like Elixir that makes use of pattern matching and small functions and lots of things that you can do in Elixir, you can do in functional programming language, and it makes the code more readable, but you can't do in OO. So at first, I'm not a professional programmer, so I program whenever I can, but I did my PhD thesis using Java. So I can say that I could write some reasonably good Java code. And when I started Elixir, before Elixir, I started Clojure, and it was difficult to say, no, how do I do that? How do I do a for loop here? There's no for loop. So I had to try to do things differently. So it's a problem that I still don't have, but I want to have. One of my projects, I have many projects, not all of them I put them in practice, but one of them was to create a programming course or even write a book for complete beginners, people that can't program in any language, and say, no, now let's learn Elixir. So without telling them that it's Elixir only, because there are many introductory books about Elixir that, for example, my friend Ulysses Almeida, he wrote a great book about learning functional programming and with Elixir, but he kind of expects that people already know how to program with some other language. I believe Dave Thomas' book also expects, and even more, Sasha Urich's book. So there's no programming book that teaches functional programming with Elixir for complete beginners, as far as I know.
Yes, such books do exist for the Haskell language, which is kind of a big step, right? Because you're not just grappling with the paradigm of, you know, what's an object and things, but you're also working into a completely different kind of type theory. And these concepts are just pretty stunning to me. So another professor that I really like is a man named John Hughes, one of the creators of Haskell. And he came to Chattanooga to attend our conference, and I was fortunate to spend another couple of days with him. But he regularly taught students without any kind of mental corruption, right? And these are computer science students. So what's interesting to me is the students that I get that are starting from scratch are normally professionals that have tried to make a go in something else, right? So they have the benefit of not having some of the baggage of a different programming paradigm that we have to deconstruct. But they also don't have the experience with the tools that they need for basic fluency. How to navigate the command line, how to use source control, how to do things like that. And that is a tremendous obstacle. So you find the same thing teaching at university?
You mean they don't have...
Basically, a fluency with the basic tools, you know, source control, editors, navigation of the command line, things like that.
Yes, the first year students here at the university, some of them don't have any fluency. So they learn C. The teachers that teach them in the first semester, they teach them C. So they learn the basics in the first semesters. When they arrive in my class, they already know how to do that. But I see what I mean. And there are some online IDEs like REPL. I don't know. It's REPL.IT and also Wandbox, where you don't have to learn everything, that create a file and all those things to be able to write some basic programs in Elixir.
Yeah, on the subject of just teaching absolute beginners, one of the best books I ever found for this was Chris Pine's Learn to Program, which is in Ruby.
Save on holiday essentials with digital coupons at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get Hass avocados for just 87 cents each with digital coupon. Limit 4. Plus, get mega packs of bone-in USDA choice beef New York strip steak for $6.97 per pound with digital coupon. Limit 2. Also this week at Safeway, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, 7-Up, or Dr. Pepper 12 packs of 12-ounce cans, or 8 packs of 12-ounce bottles, or buy 2, get 2 free, plus CRV, when you buy 4 with digital coupon. Visit Safeway.com or head in-store for more deals.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
I have a friend who was sort of mildly technically competent. He learned to program Ruby using that book. He's the CTO now of a startup. Really fun to watch that actually can work.
That's not a testimonial for Chris Pine's book. I really don't know what is. Yeah, it's really interesting to think about how to teach absolute beginners. And that's something that when Stephen and I were teaching together at the Flatiron School, that's exactly what we did. And what we were teaching was Ruby. And I think, at least at the time when I was a student there, which I was before being a teacher there, Chris Pine's book was, I don't know if it was required, but it was sort of recommended pre-reading of starting the course. And I think one of the things that I loved about teaching Ruby to absolute beginners, and one of the reasons why the school kind of touted it as such a great language for beginners, is because it's easy to see how it models the real world, right? There's an early assignment, I think, where we have students build out like a pet store or something, right? And you have a dog and the characteristics of a dog, and then you instantiate dog objects and, you know, take them, I don't know, to the vet or something like that. And for a while, I was really just totally sold on, models the real world. Like, that is the mental model for writing code that models the world. But now that I'm working with Elixir and thinking about things more functionally, I'm kind of thinking like, does it? Isn't it that message passing models the world? And that's certainly what Joe Armstrong, you know, would argue. And isn't it that the actor model really models the world? So it still feels like these things are at odds. Like, can they both be accurate representations of the way that, you know, people and objects move through the world?
Well, I think that, as I said, I came from a logic and computer science background. And there's one thing it's real in logic, even before in programming, is that there are many, many models of the world. There is, for instance, logic, there is the classical propositional logic that we use mostly on programming. It's only one logic. There is multi-valued logic, there is relevant logic, intuitionistic logic, there is many logic. I believe that depending on the problem, one model is going to be the best. For other problems, there are two possible models and you can choose. So I don't think that's a problem. Maybe this book that teaches an absolute beginner how to program in Ruby is good for a person, and this other book that teaches how to program in Haskell is good for a mathematically inclined person. And so there, I think that the great thing about all these programming languages is that there are many options. So I know people love Clojure. I know people hate Clojure because there is so many parentheses, and Clojure is even has less parentheses than Lisp. There's everything that is made with parentheses. So I don't think it's a problem. But the thing here is that we have to provide options, and the students, the users, the persons, the people that want to learn programming, they choose what's best for them.
I think that we're kind of entering a golden age of programming in some ways, because we've come out of a place when there was one true way, right? There was the Java way, and in the darkness find them, right? So we're starting to get to the point where it's not just useful, but almost expected to have more than one tool in your tool bag. And so for that reason, I think that probably the most important thing that we can learn is the skill of learning, right? And so that's something that I've always really respected about you and your work, and especially this dojo approach where you teach people to roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty first, really early in the process.
Yes, and what's great about Coding Dojo, it was created by two French guys. I believe it was created in France. I can't remember the names of the guy. Laurent Bossavie, and I don't remember the name of the other guy. But one of the goals, when I learned the Coding Dojo from one of my students, it is one of the goals, I know, you do, during 1, 2, 3 hours, you solve a problem, a code kata. And this concept of code kata was created by the great Dave Thomas, which you know well. And his idea was, it was a small problem that you'd solve several times with different techniques in different languages. And the sowing there, it's the seed for this idea that for you to be a good programmer, you can't be just, oh no, I'm going to become perfect with Java and forget all about the other language. No, you can learn Prolog, you can learn Lisp, you can learn, of course, you have to decide. That's something that was happening at the Elixir World Telegram group today, is that sometimes you have to choose. You cannot, I'm going to learn a bit of Elm, a bit of Elixir, a bit of Erlang, a bit of Java, and end up being competent in nothing. You have to choose. I'm going to be good in Elixir, and I'm going to study the other language so that I will be a better Elixir developer, a better developer in general. And maybe in the future, I can, oh no, now I don't have a job with Elixir, but I have a Java job, so I can do Java too. And this is a real case. A friend of mine, she had an Elixir job, and then she went to Sweden to be an Erlang developer, and then she found a Java job. So,
yeah, in my experience, the whole idea of being a generalist sort of turns out to be a pretty good specialty. Just having multiple things to lean on and having a wide knowledge of technology, servers. For example, the field of web development is by its very nature extremely wide. There's a ton of things you should know to be really knowledgeable about the web, both back end, front end, and web standards and APIs. There are so many things. And every domain in programming is basically like that, in that there's a lot of depth and there's a lot of width. And of course, you can focus down on a language to become an absolute expert in wielding the minute details of Java or Elixir or Python or C. But you can also pick up a few different languages or pick up a wide skill set where, okay, you need a SQL database up and running, or now we need to set up some additional servers, or we need to write something in this language because we're using a project written in an entirely different language. Is there anyone that can actually read the code and work with it? Okay, yeah. If you know a few languages, picking up a new one, for example, is usually fairly straightforward. except when you run into like the paradigm shift of OO functional programming, for example. But I think having that generalist approach tends to, I've often heard the advice to specialize. You need to be good at a specific thing. And I think people mistake what that should be and what that needs to be. I think you can be very experienced. You can be an expert. That doesn't mean that you know every detail of the language. It can, but then you're a language doctor or a language specialist. That's usually not the most useful value add for a particular endeavor, in my experience.
And I mean, it strikes me, Adolfo, that you are essentially starting to move people in this direction, right? With your functional programming course and with the way that the world is moving or needs to move, maybe it's moving there fast enough. But it strikes me that you've at some point you've made a decision to take people in this direction. When was that? When did you start to be more of kind of open up the blinders a little bit? In the United States, there are a whole lot of schools that are invested in teaching Java and teaching Microsoft because that's where the certifications are. And they've made investments in those places and they just can't break away.
I have a lot of freedom here in the public university where the government owns the university and it's free for the students, so I can offer the course. I have some freedom to offer some courses, and I decided to start this functional programming course. And functional programming is getting more well-known with Brazilian software developers because there is a big company called Nubank, which it's a kind of a digital banking company. They have a credit card, and they bought Platform Attack, which is the company where Joseph Alin not only worked that, but he was one of the owners of the company. And after that, the same company bought Cognitect, which is the company behind Clojure. So there was some kind of publicity for functional programming language here in Brazil because of these two companies that were bought. So I hope that in the near future, I will have more students for my functional programming class. I try to offer them this because what they learn as mandatory courses is C, C++, and Java. That's what they have to learn, but if they want, they can learn Elixir too.
I think related to this, kind of on the topic of teaching and producing generalists, sort of what you're saying, like, okay, well, students are, if not required, then they're kind of put into these boxes to learn these three languages. And if they want to, they can come over here and learn this as well. Really relates to something you said earlier, which is that you're not teaching students Elixir, although, you know, hopefully you are. You're teaching them how to learn. And I've always found that one of the best ways to do that is to like make your students strategically uncomfortable, like kind of let them suffer a little. And I'm going to actually put Steven in the hot seat a little bit, because I think that this is, if that's my teaching philosophy, I think I probably stole that from you.
A little bit. Yeah. I think that, you know, there's sort of the thinking about learning that you learn through uncomfort the most. So the closer you can safely push people into being uncomfortable, the faster they'll sort of learn. I think everything is sort of theoretical until you've gotten to the point where you're like, oh, I have a deadline and I have to build this project and I'm going to present in front of my entire class in 2 days. Oh my God, this is the end of the world if I do this wrong. But yeah, I think suffering is important. Even if I sound a little mean when I say it, I think that suffering and struggle is where you get the best learning and where it sticks.
It's funny. There's a man named Evan Miller, which we should definitely have on this podcast at some point. He is behind the Erlang project, Chicago Boss. And so Adolfo, we were doing this mentor group that you're a part of, you know, long before you and I met. We were doing it in Chattanooga and everyone would show up, right? Pre-pandemic. But Evan would look over my shoulder when I was teaching somebody and someone would start to go off in the wrong direction. And I'd kind of give them a gentle nudge, you know, kind of nudge the rudder every now and then. And, you know, I'd turn around and Evan would be
Save on holiday essentials with digital coupons at Safeway. This week at Safeway, get Hass avocados for just 87 cents each with digital coupon. Limit 4. Plus, get mega packs of bone-in USDA Choice Beef New York Strip Steak for $6.97 per pound with digital coupon. Limit 2. Also this week at Safeway, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, 7-Up, or Dr. Pepper 12 packs of 12-ounce cans, or 8 packs of 12-ounce bottles, or buy 2, get 2 free, plus CRV, when you buy 4 with digital coupon. Visit Safeway.com or head in-store for more deals.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like getting right out of bed late for work, yet your hair looks immaculate. No blow dryer, no comb, no sculpting gel. Just a flawless look. As if you walked out of your house and straight onto the cover of a men's fashion magazine.
Good morning, Steven. Oh, have you done something new with your hair? It looks amazing.
They don't have the slightest clue you were half asleep, drooling on your pillow not 10 minutes ago. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Shaking his head, right? And then, you know, so I would try to explain harder and he would be shaking his head. And then, so at this one time, I turned around, I said, "What, Evan, what?" You know, and everybody just turned around. I'm, you know, usually pretty unflappable, right? But I was not that day. And he said, "Bruce, it's all about the struggle." And so, you know, that's probably my great weakness in a classroom setting is building in enough struggle, right? So I teach a lot of technique. So what I should do is allow the mistakes to happen in the right context and be kind of a guide, be a guardrail so that when the struggles happen, you know, can leave opportunity to bring people back on course and then cast them into the wind again. But yeah, you saw that firsthand.
Yes, yes. And it's important because it's related to that model that you used, the Dreyfus model. And of course, if someone is a beginner, he or she needs more direct instruction. But if someone that has a little bit more of experience than you, okay. Right. Go to the internet and try to find what's the solution. Because one thing that I also think that's important nowadays that wasn't important when I started to learn programming, because when I started learning programming a long time ago, I started with BASIC, there was no internet. So all I had was a book and the computer. But now we have lots of places where you can go. If you want to learn Elixir, you can go to Elixir School, and there is also the Elixir Forum, Elixir on Slack, Elixir on Discord, and I have just created the Elixir World on Telegram, and also Twitter. There's a lot of people tweeting about Elixir, and I think nowadays, if you want to learn a language, you have also to learn how to navigate all these opportunities to learn from others in the community.
I wanted to plus one Elixir World on Telegram. I'm a big fan of Telegram, and I joined it once I realized it existed, and immediately scrolled up and saw interesting conversation.
Thanks. I just started my idea with Elixir World was exactly that. I'm part of the Elixir Brazil Telegram, and there are many interesting conversations there. In Portuguese, of course, because it's our language, but there's no group like that in English. So I'm going to create one for English speaking. Of course, not English speaking. It's people from all over the world. I listed, there are people from many countries. And so don't expect perfect English there, but people that can understand and write basic English.
That's so important too, Adolfo, that we don't all look alike or sound alike. I think that one of the things you get is different problem-solving perspectives. And when we have people who have come from different backgrounds and different skills and you get different language approaches. And you have Justin's, you know, make everything, you know, I will steamroll any obstacle, you know, I'll, you know, rewrite the Linux kernel for nerves. And then you have Bruce Williams and his approach and his kind of Zen-like approach to making things beautiful and making them flow and making them exactly in the right abstractions. And then you get Absinthe, but that's what makes community special. And I'm really glad that you don't see perfect English there, right? That you see such a variety, not just words, but of thought structures and paradigms and things like that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of our responsibilities as teachers and as educators, I think, is not just to give people materials so they can learn how to do a thing, but it's how to create conditions around them in which they can learn. And part of that are the conditions of this community, of the Elixir community, of the Erlang community, of the functional programming community. And that's why I think in particular, you know, a lot of the work that you've done at OLFO to create these resources and these channels and these spaces where people can come together and learn together, I think is really incredible. And I would love to hear from you. What more do you want to see in the Elixir community? Like, what resource do you wish existed that doesn't? Maybe it's that Elixir for Absolute Beginners book. You know, what kind of involvement or participation do you want to see from people in the group that you've created or in other groups? You know, what can we all be doing to keep this community growing so that we can keep educating and keep bringing in newcomers?
Wow. That's a good question. Maybe I really like Exorcism, and that's a resource that I think it's not, there's no need to create another Exorcism, but maybe people in the community that want to help others, they should go there and become a mentor, and the others that want to learn should go there and become mentees and try to learn using research like that. And I mean, let me just say what I see in the Brazilian community. There's a lot. There's something like coding with Elixir. One on Twitch, some on YouTube. I would like to see this more in English. Maybe I don't see it because it has not arrived to me, but it's there. So if you know someone doing that, please tweet me and then I try to include that. I have a small GitHub project where I'm compiling. Maybe after some time, I'll give this information to the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation, because that's one of the things that let me introduce this subject. I'm part of the education working group of the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation, and we are doing lots of things try to make not on Elixir, but also Erlang and the other Bing language, to make them more popular, to allow more people that want to learn these languages to learn them. So for instance, we have had Elixir ConfU virtual a few months ago, and there is a professor, and she said, oh, my students want to take part in the training. So the foundation supported the students, and we have a lot of initiatives going on. We had, before the pandemic, we've had some meetings where we discussed it. For instance, one of the initiatives was to try to find professors in many universities that are teaching either Erlang or Elixir or other Bing language, and to try to connect these professionals that use Elixir in production with these professors that teach Elixir or Erlang, so that these professionals can give talks to the students. And I believe there is also a need, as I said, for a good introductory book. But I know that's because I particularly love books. Maybe most of the people nowadays don't love books as much as I do. So there's maybe no economic reason for an introductory book, but I love books. I would like to see a real introductory book on Elixir. And I think that's it.
Elixir should be a good language to break into functional programming. And I say that because I think that Elixir can stand on its own when you just get into the core, just the kind of the pure functions, the exorcism sized and shaped projects. And you can do that without absorbing a whole lot of functional algebra in terms of the type structures, but you still have the full power of functional programming that you can bring to bear. So it should be, and the other thing that I think is critical is that with the pipe, you have this idea of glue between concepts. And that's the hard thing about teaching someone that's new or teaching someone from an object-oriented system, where we say, okay, objects, don't do that. inheritance, don't do that. So there's a lot of things that we say not to do. But if unless you replace that glue, it's difficult to get traction with a new programmer. But if you have this framework of, hey, there's a module that collects things, and then that module surrounds this central type, and then you can kind of chain things together with simple transformations. I think it should be. I think you're definitely onto something. That learning programming 101 in Elixir is definitely something that you could do.
I would like to say something else about this learning the community. One thing that I noticed that it's really attracted me to the language and the larger community, the Beam community, because it's not only Elixir, but also Erlang, is the podcasts. This podcast already has more than 100 episodes, and there are other podcasts. And there is this great podcast that it seems has already finished, but it has a lot of great interviews there that you can, if you want to listen to interviews with Joe Armstrong from the past, that it's there on Elixir Fountain. So I think that this community, of course, I before Elixir, I was following the Clojure community, which seems to be smaller. It has less resources for beginners. Maybe today it has the same, but at the time it had less resources for beginners. So I think the idea of a podcast, I love podcasts because I can learn unexpected things. It's that word that people use, it's serendipity, right? So you're not expecting to learn something. And I mean, of course, the learning that happens in a podcast is at a much higher level than the learning that you learn when you, for instance, if you go to Tetris series in your channel, Bruce, and the Groxio channel, of course, you're going to learn some more technical things, technical details about how to write a live view app. But it's also, you can learn a lot of things and listening to people from the community, and that's a great resource too. And I'm planning to do some research about this, the podcasts and how they are perceived by the community. I hope that when this episode goes on there, I will have a survey to survey the community about how, because I know there are some people that don't like podcasts, they won't listen to podcasts, but I know also that there is many people that listen to podcasts, but what do they get from the podcast? What do they expect from the podcasts? What do they value more, a person because he or she was a guest on a podcast, or because what he or she said on a podcast? There are some questions that I would like to see answered.
Yes, I used to listen to, I've forgotten the name of it now, but the only Erlang podcast that existed back in the day with Brian Hunter and Zach. But I would always get value from it, from things like Bruce saying, hey, you should really focus on the transformations. And, you know, it's a very pithy statement in exactly the right meaning of the word, like hearing someone smart say that and go, huh, I wonder how I actually put that into practice.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody walks into the elevator and says,
happy Friday.
Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
At Merrill West Credit Union, we're working towards a brighter financial future for both our members and our community, knowing that when you succeed, we all succeed. Let's get acquainted with our premier savings for new members, now paying over 20 times the national average. Another great reason to move your money to a credit union. Learn more at merrillwest.com/premier savings. Merrill West Credit Union, working for you. Today, tomorrow, together. Insured by NCUA.
And then figuring it out, you know, a month later. That's kind of the value I always got from programming podcasts.
I believe the name of the podcast was Mostly Erlang.
It was Mostly Erlang, yeah. I listened to that while I was painting a house.
I definitely agree with you. and also that sometimes you're listening to podcasts and you don't really know what to expect. You don't know what you're going to learn. And that's what I appreciate about it, because I think, you know, you pick up a book for a reason, right? I want to learn how to do X in Elixir. You know, you probably read a blog post for a reason as well. You were literally Googling how to do this thing, and like a blog post came up and you read it. But with podcasts, it's just kind of like an open space to start encountering things that you didn't expect, hear people talk about topics that weren't necessarily on your mind. It's kind of like why I like, I don't know how you guys are going to feel about this comparison, but what I like about cable television is that I only watch Law and Order on TV. They pick out the Law and Order episode for you all day long from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Like, you didn't choose the Law and Order episode. You're just watching whatever they put in front of your face. And that's fun. You know, that kind of is, that's what I'm looking for when I'm listening to podcasts. Like, I'm interested in a broad topic. You know, I'm interested in who these people are. And I just want to hear what they have to say. And I don't know where it's going to take me.
So you're not looking for more murder in your podcast. You're just, I think I get it.
Well, I'm also listening. That'll be one of my picks, actually. It's a pretty good true crime podcast that I was introduced to recently.
So what you're saying is we'll get back to the murder part.
Yeah, we'll talk about murder later.
Yeah, I'm very curious to hear what comes out of that survey at all, though, because I do feel that the different podcasts that are available for the Elixir community, and we have a disproportionate amount compared to our community size, I think. So we have a lot of them, and I find all of them interesting. And I feel like we actually do manage to cover different focus points and have wildly different styles. The Outlaws are definitely a style unto their own, and I feel like there's a lot of difference between the Wizards and us, even though we are both to some extent guest driven. And yeah, the whole meta conversation of what podcasts are good for, and yeah, very interesting. I hope to see your survey soon.
Well, speaking of picks, this might be as good a time as any to wrap up our conversation and move into picks. So we'll just kind of round robin. And if anybody has any links or recommendations to share, this is the time for it. Start with Lars. What do you have for us?
Well, I have the newly launched Beam Bloggers web ring, and I'll call out Sophie and, well, Alex isn't here, so I can't call him out, that you're supposed to PR me your blogs so they can be in the web ring. But yeah, this is a fun little project that I wanted to put together to just spread the love. Traffic is rotating around the Beam Bloggers. There's more design to come. Maybe it will even be pretty by the time this episode launches. So yeah, check it out. It's beambloggers.com, or you can look around for my GitHub, but beambloggers.com.
Very cool. I'm very excited to PR that and include my blog there. It'll inspire me to write more. Thank you for that. How about you, Bruce?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Of course, the Groxio course is going on now, the LiveView course. And that's been a lot of fun. One of the things that I get to do is look at techniques that are kind of off the beaten path. And one of the things I really like is schemaless chain sets. So I've kind of been playing with where those live, right? It's an Ecto thing, but it's something that likes to live in the view. So I'm working on a video this afternoon that'll go out with the fourth chapter that'll come out probably about the same time as this episode. So I'll post that. I'm also excited to be working on a new project, but just to give you a teaser, here's a keynote. There's a keynote on failure by a guy named Brian Troutwine. And he's really just a fabulous speaker and an excellent person to, you know, that kind of is the anti-Bruce, right? So I'm optimist, happy path, and Brian is how many ways can things fail? And so we're kind of kicking around the idea of putting together a video series of how things fail, why they fail. Less of a programmer series and more of a kind of an exploration of failure. So, but this is a teaser for that project.
Oh, there's a lot of good stuff there. I'm looking forward to checking some of that out. Let's see who's up next. Steven, any picks for us?
Yeah, I guess a general pick. I'll give what I'm using, but find something that does this. I found an like a PDF reader that does text-to-speech. I don't know where this has been my entire life, but like I now walk the dog and I'm listening. I got Bruce in my ear. Well, I have a robot in my ear saying Bruce's words. I've got, you know, everything that I've been meaning to read and then kind of get around to just constantly going in my ears now. I have Android, so I'm using eReader Prestigio. They have a couple of different services for reading. But when they ask you to select, if you scroll down, you can pick the local Android one. So you can get the generic Android voice doing text-to-speech, which is good enough. But if you haven't done this, do this. You need this in your life. Being able to just throw a technical book, reading growing object-oriented software guided by tests in one ear. It's really, really cool. Do that.
Good call. Yeah, that's a good idea. Josh, any picks?
I have two picks. The first is the GitHub Arctic Code Vault's tech tree. Which I've linked to, and it's just, you mentioned curation in the context of cable television. While I basically hate cable television, I do like the concept of curation. And this is, they've listed just a ridiculous number of books that, hey, if you want to know about how to do stuff on computers, whether it be networking or software development or whatever, here's a list of just really solid book choices. And then also I saw a quote, I don't know who to attribute it to. My friend Michael Alvis sent it to me, but it wasn't his. Said, running a successful open source project is just goodwill hunting in reverse, where you start out as a respected genius and end up being a janitor who gets into fights. And I just wanted to share that.
That definitely resonates. Yeah, interesting. All right, I'll run down some of mine and then we'll hand it off to our guest. I've got a few this time around. So we talked a little bit about being a generalist and how as engineers, as programmers, it is. That's the way to go. I think a lot of us feel. So there's a great book by David Epstein called, Range, How Generalists Triumph in a Specialized World. Really interesting book on this topic, sort of more broadly speaking. And I was actually introduced to this book by my partner who is an artist and who wrote what I thought was a very interesting post on the topic of being a generalist from the point of view of like an artist or a creative worker. So I'm going to share that link as well. Not quite shameless self-promotion, shameless someone else promotion. And then we've got a recent blog post from someone you may have heard of, Steven Nunez, on the topic of managing RabbitMQ connections with a library called XRabbitPool. And I just thought it was a really very clear, very straightforward look at, why we need to manage connections in this way, what this tool does for us. And what I really liked about it is there were all the pictures of, I forget what it's called, the Erlang GUI, and it shows you the processes. What's that called, Stephen?
Observer.
Erlang Observer, yeah, showing you the various processes that are being managed by your connection pool. And it's really fun to see if I do this, and then we go back to the Erlang Observer and we see the tree kind of grow and shrink depending on what you're doing. And I just thought you laid it out super well. And of course, you hit upon this library and its tooling as part of the work we're doing to prepare for our very exciting, thrilling even conference at this year's ElixirConf on the topic of working with Elixir and RabbitMQ and using it to bring in a greenfield Elixir app into your legacy technical ecosystem. So if you haven't signed up yet, you might want to get on that. And that's it for me. Let's see if Adolfo has any picks for us.
Yes, I have maybe too many picks, but I have already sent you the links, the Elixir World Telegram group, which is a Telegram group for any people related to any Bing language. What I like about Telegram groups is that I don't have the fear of missing out, because when there is a Telegram group which is reasonably large, then you go there and there is 200 new messages and you can't keep up. You forget that you'll not be able to keep up with all the messages. So whenever you have time, you go there and you see what's happening, and then you go back to what you're doing. I have already sent out other links related to Telegram, but it's okay. I think it's important to say that we have the Education Working Group of the Erlang Ecosystem Foundation. We have a list of issues at our GitHub page. So I think it's important if people want to help our group. There are many issues open. And Elixir Brazil 2020, Elixir Brazil 2020, is it going to happen? It would happen in May, and Bruce would be here in São Paulo, but it seems it's going to happen physically, we hope, only in 2021, but it's probably going to happen online. So that's what I would like to say. If people want to learn Elixir in Portuguese, the language of the creator of Elixir, it will be possible to learn it online. And my last pick is going to be a movie, because I really enjoyed the Elixir Fountain podcast, the last part, it was, I think it was fire behind the code, because I could get to know better the people that were part of the community. And there, for instance, I learned that Joe Armstrong loved to play the piano. I can't play the piano, but I love movies and I love some Brazilian movies. The last time I was a guest here, I suggested people watch the movie Aquarius. Now I have another suggestion from the same director. It's Bacurau. It's okay. Some people will not like this movie because it's kind of violent, but it has a very deep message about Brazil today and about the world today. So it's a movie that I really like. It's called Bacurau.
This actually looks really cool. I just Googled it. This is my kind of movie. The locals are not exactly what they appear to be and hide dangerous secrets. Yes, sign me up. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today, Adolfo. This was a great conversation. And that's it for today's episode of Elixir Mix.
When it comes to quiet luxury and contemporary elegance, Swiss watchmaker Longines stands out with over 190 years of crafting fine timepieces for dress, sport, and adventure. Throughout its history, women of distinction, including aviation pioneer Amelia Earhart, Academy Award winner Jennifer Lawrence, and alpine skier Michaela Schifrin, have relied on Longines for their timekeeping needs. One of Longines' most sought-after models, the Mini Dolce Vita, continues this tradition as an icon of the Art Deco era, blending elegance and functionality. The collection is a modern extension of the original Dolce Vita, inspired by a Longines legend from 1927. You can choose the classic stainless steel case or opt for the eye-catching diamond bezel. So if you're looking for that perfect gift for a special someone or treating yourself this holiday season, visit Topper Jewelers to explore the full collection of Longines watches for women. Mention this ad for a special surprise that will make your experience memorable.
At Merrill West Credit Union, we're working towards a brighter financial future for both our members and our community, knowing that when you succeed, we all succeed. Let's get acquainted with our premier savings for new members, now paying over 20 times the national average. Another great reason to move your money to a credit union. Learn more at merrillwest.com/premier savings. Merrill West Credit Union, working for you. Today, tomorrow, together. Insured by NCUA.